Hey, Brian.
Hey, Elliot.
What's the talk of the table?
Today, we are sitting down with Nevin Holmes and Quinn Morris, design duo behind the upcoming mythopoetic mech tragedy game Dragon Reactor. Embers, ashes, moments, and stars. Nevin and Quinn, welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Wow. Hey.
We're on a podcast.
You're on a podcast.
That's what they tell me. I'll believe it when I see it.
Not only are you on a podcast, you're on the podcast.
This is actually the only podcast.
The only podcast.
The only podcast. And can you believe it? Hosted by two white men.
Oh, no!
What a novelty.
I see my waveform clipping so immensely.
That's how you know it's a good show.
Well, thank you both so much for being here. Today, we want to talk about Dragon Reactor. We want to get into this game, what makes it unique as a mech game, how you're sort of eschewing the crunchy impulses of mech game design that people will often fall into, and what people can expect from the full scope of this game that is crowdfunding as listeners are hearing this right now. But first, there's a word in your copy that I want to dig into that I think will kind of help set the table for this conversation. What do you mean by mythopoetic in describing this game?
Nova, I think this one's you.
Yeah. The idea behind this is really that we wanted to pull on something and push people towards not just, oh, this is a daggum war story with big robots. We want you to push towards myth, legend, poetry. Throughout the game, it's very poetically written. I believe y'all have had a chance to read through the little preview, which I'm sure we'll get into.
Mm-hmm.
But we really want you to not just be telling, cool, we're doing mechs, we're doing war, we're doing rolling dice, moving mice. We want you to lean into the high drama of myth and tell stories with these like very poetic, dramatic narratives.
Yeah, and kind of like we've really enshrined that not only in the copy, right, which is certainly a good place to start, but also, you know, originally the title for the GM role in this game was The Handler. And then as the game got stranger and stranger, that felt worse and worse until we were thinking about, you know, in particular, I was thinking about epic poetry. I was like, I want this game to feel like the Odyssey. And I was like, what's the title? What do you call Homer? And I was like, oh, right. The poet. And so that is the name of the GM role, is the poet.
It's really funny because we made that change. And I feel like hundreds of other things just started to click together with how we approach the game. Like, we find and replaced handler to poet, and we're like, oh, this is a weird game. Now we know what we're doing.
Okay, this ain't regular anymore.
And I think it's a little in the zeitgeist right now, or there's just like a little bit of a conversation happening about, oh, we, you know, our GMs are different. We renamed the GM role. And then there's a little bit of skepticism, right? Like, what does that actually do? And I think, yeah. I don't know, sometimes it doesn't really do that much. But I think other times the GM role tells you very clearly what your relationship to the fiction is supposed to be. And this is one of those times. You can say that it's just a title. This has a mechanical impact on how the game feels to play.
That's great. I want to drill on that last thing you said, is that like it's not just a change in title, in naming convention. It is a mechanic, because I think one of the things that like we were talking about as we were reading through the full game and the demo is that terminology is a huge mechanic in this game. Like it's like the words that you have chosen for various things, just like they tell you like exactly the kind of story you want to tell, like
they
conflicts,
matter.
Refrains, aftermath, countdown. These words have big meaning to them.
The one, because I, like you were saying, I am a person who, when I see somewhat a different title for the GM, I instinctively roll my eyes. And I did that with this one until I did, because I do it with every game that I see that doesn't use like GM or whatever. But because I've been betrayed so many times where someone's like, let's use a fun word and then not back it up. But this one, when we went down different terminologies, like things like use the word conflict instead of encounter or battle or something. Like, conflict has a very clear, like, vibe of what war feels like. It says something way, like, encounter feels D&D. It feels not real. It feels, like, out of the realm of reality. Conflict is a word that, especially in today, in the year of our Lord 2025, we absolutely understand, like, the
right
depth behind what that word means.
Yeah, well, can I, may I offer another clarification kind of on the distinction there, because I think that's a great yeah. comparison. But it's just like, encounter is momentary. An encounter is something
yes.
that will end in front of you. But this conflict, we use this word, I'm not going to say that we did this fully intentionally or anything, but I think we picked that word because it feels conceptual. It's not just yes. this one conflict. It is the thing itself. You are encountering the concept of conflict and are within it for a while.
Originally, too, in the very, very early versions of the game, we thought that there was going to be more of a chance of you getting into a fight of some sort, a conflict, if you will. Whoa. Not in your mech. And so there was a whole phase where we were designing around like different types of conflict, and we kind of realized that, no, this game works best when you're just in this. And we kept the word conflict because it works so well in like what Brian was saying. It leans really, really well into that. Like, it gives you that specific idea.
It also, there's a line we pulled out when we were prepping this, just a bunch of lines that like were really struck us from this game. And I think this really leans into what you guys are going for of like mythopoetic. Like, you want it to feel poetic and grand. And in the conflict section, the first line is, conflicts have only one victor and it always comes at great cost.
Mm-hmm. That's a Quinn one.
That fucking tells you what this game is.
Is it?
Yeah, I think that's a Quinn one. Yeah, a bunch of those as we were writing, we were adding those things in, and I have relatively distinct memories of who did what, and it's kind of fun. That's a Quinn one. Some of
You're
them we
sure?
workshopped
I could
a whole
swear
lot.
That I'm was pretty one of sure. Yours.
I'm pretty sure.
We've been working on this game for so long that there's some stuff that we just genuinely don't know who it comes from. And I think,
yeah,
honestly,
3 years?
Yeah, but I mean, I think that really speaks to the genuine, this isn't a game where this is a 50-50% partnership. This is a 60-60% partnership.
That's great. I was gonna say 100-100.
That's a line
whatever.
To keep forever.
That
yeah.
too, right? But yeah, but just this, it's impossible to look at this game and for us to really tease out what parts of it belong to each of us. This is the two of us. Some motherfucker played the polymerization card.
That's good.
It's true. There's not another way to put it. It's very true.
There's a great thing that Will Yope said when we had them on the podcast about working with Adam Vass, and how Adam always said a thing of like, when you bring something to a design we're working on, it is no longer yours, it is ours. Like, once it's brought into the dock, once it's brought into the conversation, it becomes our baby to contend with. It's no longer productive to think about who did what. So I love that. I love this. 60-60 is a great line. That's really sticky.
I think that's so true. Like, this is making me think about when we first started working on this project versus how we work on it now.
Oh, man.
Quinn, can I be mean to you for a second?
I'll be mean back later. Go for it.
Okay, great. So there was a moment we like knew that we were going to start working on this. And Quinn, like, in a day, had a whole fucking game written. It was just a whole bunch of stuff. And I had to message him and be like, hey, there's a lot of juice in here, but we're working on this together. So let's take a step back. And we kept a lot of what was in there, but, you know, Ship of Theseus style, who the fuck knows where it came from now. But one of the first things we did was read through what was written and figure out like, okay, so there's some ideas here. I already have my own ideas of what I'm wanting to do. Let's use this as our nexus point, if you will, and let's figure out where we're going to go from this solid, solid foundation that we've got. And now now we just meet up every Sunday and we write this shit.
Look at us now. No, there was really, I really do want, or I love that we have the opportunity to talk to put a spotlight on our collaboration and the nature of working together. Because I think, especially at the beginning and for a good while, kind of before we really got into the rhythm of it, me and Nova were friends. I don't know that I'd call us like really good friends until we had been working on this for a bit. And just like me and Nova work on projects pretty differently, mostly because I'm a hobbyist and Nova's much, much more of a professional than I am. And I say this, again, not in terms of judgment, but in terms of, does this help pay your rent? Does this help pay your bills? Do you rely on this in any way? I don't, and I never have. Maybe I never will. It'd be nice if I could, but you know, so my approach was very different. And I think it's very, we just had friction. We had genuine friction at moments, but you know, nothing that ever got too hot, but enough that I think both of us at many points were like, oh, that's kind of annoying. Oh, that's
pretty Yeah, we very much figured out like, okay, when there is friction, like how do we handle it? And I think that that's something that's really important to figure out as a creative duo. I mean, we're talking to a creative duo right now. I'm sure you know exactly what we're talking about. Anyone who's worked with anybody knows this, but it's very satisfying to look at it and go like, oh, dang, look at us now, huh?
Yeah.
Gee whiz.
Because now, like, me and Nova, we just know how to dance. We know how to dance with each other.
Mm-hmm. 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 Just before this, Elliot was telling me about a game that he is designing and told me a name of it, and I vehemently disagree with the name, and we both just have to agree to disagree that the other one is incorrect.
I don't even want to talk about naming shit right now. Oh, my God.
No, let's talk naming. Because there's a word in this title also that is a loaded word in our hobby, and that is dragon. But dragons ain't your grandpappy's dragons in this game. So talk to me about the titular dragons of Dragon Reactor.
So we're talking about the dragons. We're not talking about the name of the game. Great, good. We can continue.
No, I want to talk about the name. Let's talk about the name.
Let's talk about both.
Nova doesn't want to talk about the name.
It's not that I don't want to talk about the name. We'll be here for fucking ever if we talk about the name. It boils down to, we did not have a solidified name for this game until like 2 weeks before we announced the crowdfund. It was going back and forth fucking constantly because we could not get something that worked right. There were a lot of things that we tried. I can't even remember a bunch of them right now, but they didn't hit.
No, I think the one that stuck around
War
the
Dragon
most
was like
War
the
Dragon,
longest
which,
one.
Which it sucks.
It was bad.
Every week we opened up the dock and we would look at it and be like, I do not like this name, but we didn't have anything. I've never in my life. Like I flatter myself to think that naming things is one of my talents, and this was just an endless slog. And I think this one actually happened. It was a combination of a couple of things because I think one of the very first name pitches that Nova came up with was Crisis Reactor.
Pretty good.
Which kind of has, it's not bad. It kind of has that like Final Fantasy vibe to it.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
And so, and just it was at that point that Nova mentioned before we announced the game, and I was racking the brain the game over, and I was like, War Dragon, Crisis Reactor, Dragon Reactor, and I'm pretty sure I texted it to Nova, and I was like, Nova, I don't want to jinx it. I think I've just got it, and I put it in spoilers.
I ended up, because the one thing that you should do anytime you think you have a name for a game is Google it.
Sure.
And I found out that the Dragon Reactor is a real thing. It is one of the original prototype nuclear reactors ever made. It currently exists decommissioned in the UK. It's a real thing. And when I saw that, I was like, okay, we finally have the fucking name.
Yeah, especially when it's a game about unstoppable war machines and stuff. Yeah, sometimes you just stumble upon the right answer, don't you?
Yep.
It's kind of like naming a game Demon Core.
Yeah, which honestly, banger.
Goes hard.
Sorry, no one else can make Demon Core. I'm making Demon Core.
it honestly, though, it does make sense. In a game that is so, like we were talking about earlier, so specific about the words that it uses and that it chooses to be mythopoetic and that you choose for the game master to be the poet rather than the game master, the facilitator, or the warden, or whatever, that words are so important is fitting for this game. That the title was that type of thing makes sense, because it's a game that is more focused than maybe some other games on the specificity of what language is and you want to feel in the game.
So many times where you were just like, how do we feel about this sentence? All right, the sentence is fine, but I hate this word. But why do you hate that word? Well, because of this, because of that. It's very, very particular.
That feels familiar to writing together, Brian.
Yeah.
To pull it back, to talk about the dragons themselves.
Yes.
So we knew that we wanted to do a mech game. We knew that we wanted to do kind of like a sci-fantasy thing. And we knew that we wanted to use dragons as the term. That is something that was like consistent throughout the whole thing. And Quinn has a great thing that they have said before about this, where it's you know, no, Quinn, you say it. I don't have it locked in.
All right. I have it locked in. Okay. So this game started as a seed, right? Which was basically the idea of when you look at what a Gundam is thematically, especially in 0079, what is a Gundam? The Gundam is a nuke. It is the single thing that can end a war by itself. And that's something that is a thematic role that I felt mechs were missing in other mech games that I was looking at. And so I was like, sure. What is it? What does it mean? What is it thematically when you have something that is a single existence that's greater than any army you can put against it? What beats everything? It is a nuke and it is a dragon. And so that was like, this is the founding principle of the game, is you pilot a dragon. I think a tagline that I really wanted to get in somewhere, but we couldn't find a place for, was "The world must change and you are a dragon."
That was an original name. We thought for a while we were going to do a really long name, and that was going to be it. We decided against it.
Yeah, you are a dragon. Ugh.
Yeah.
It's good. They're not, you know, they don't have to be dragons.
Right.
But choosing that word really helped us have, again, really solid foundation to build towards that myth side of things, because what is more mythical than a fucking dragon?
It's the symbol of fantasy. That's what fantasy is.
It's a big robot.
And I feel like this plays into kind of one of the other things we wanted to talk about, was how like this isn't a crunchy mech game. This is not like, you know, you're not adding up math for all the little like bits of mechanical function in your mech. Like, a lot of the mechanics you have in here are very interpretive, very story forward things. Like, in particular, I love the once per session and once abilities of different mech suits.
The once abilities are fucked.
The once abilities are so fucked. It's like, so kill everything, control everything. Yeah. Like, this is
very what are the Zenith abilities and Heart?
Yeah, they're very literally Zenith.
Two hours ago, I was talking to Ryan Khan, the one true Ryan Khan. And we had that exact conversation. We noted that exact thing.
It's great, especially because this is a game where you're the dragons, these mechs that you're piloting, are, as you say, nukes. And all of the once abilities, all of these like Zenith abilities, are nukes. Like, I'm looking at one that is meld with your dragon, unlocking its full potential, achieving an action greater than magnitude 4, which is a magnitude that it encompasses an entire battlefield. You can never leave the cockpit again. Like, to
I'm really proud of that one.
To have it's that really in good. Your pocket as a player and just like be waiting for when you get to pull that trigger, or do I pull that trigger? Like, then it just goes into the you know, mutually assured destruction, the arms race of what a nuclear bomb represents and what a dragon represents. And like, now the game is off to the races, especially because this is a game that isn't interested in, I don't want to say like glorifying, but like, violence and conflicts are, it's fun to play, but you're going to have to then live in the aftermath. Like, conflicts are not encounters. Conflicts have catastrophic results, And this game is very interested in living in those results.
Uh-huh. This game is, turns out it's about catastrophe.
Yeah.
I actually just realized we're 20-something minutes into this, and we haven't actually said really what the game is, which is my curse every time I'm on a podcast. So Dragon Reactor is a, as we've said a million times, a mythopoetic mech TTRPG. As you're listening to this, you can go to bytes.rip/dreams. That's bytes.rip/dreams, like the thing you have when you sleep. And you can back it if you think we're great, which you should if you're this far in. Like has kind of been said, it's kind of a story game. It's got a little bit of crunch to it, but it's not like high math crunch. It's kind of a bit of resource management. And it is a game where the players take on the role of pilots who sit in the cockpit of the most powerful weapons in the galaxy. The poet guides their story and helps kind of, you know, control the table and reacts to what happens. But it is a game about... there's a way that I put it. It is a game about wanting to change the world, but having to pull the trigger.
No, yeah. Wanting to do the right thing.
Let me do that. This is an edited podcast. This is a game about wanting to do the right thing, but having to pull the trigger. Mm-hmm. You make these characters, you make their mechs, and you, throughout the first session, you create your setting and you create the factions that are involved and figure out where you as players fit into that. And then at the end of the first session, you decide what your first conflict is going to be. Session one starts and you are in it. It is a phase-based game that goes from conflict to aftermath to countdown, and then it just repeats in that cycle. It's very interested in, like Brian was saying, consequences and living in them. There are a lot of little bits and pieces throughout the game, and huge bits and pieces throughout the game that are all about that. And it kind of kicks ass, I think is what I'm trying to say.
It doesn't just kick general ass, it kicks your ass specifically when you play it.
I am extremely excited to talk about the aftermath and the countdown specifically. Countdown is the thing I most want to talk about. But just kind of on the definition of the game, there are three sentences that I pulled out of this game as I was reading it that I think to me define what the game is in just a couple of sentences. And I just love to read them back to you because I think they're all great. The first one is defining how this game relates to war. War is fed by the blood of soldiers and sustained by the lives and labor of millions. Maybe they believe in the cause, maybe they don't. Regardless, they fight on. The second is, as I said before, conflicts have only one victor. It always comes at great cost. And the third is relating specifically to countdown, that this is not your time to spend as you see fit. This is war's time and you are just borrowing it.
I think that's my favorite line in the whole fucking game, actually.
It's. I also want to give a small shout out to a line that was in your demo that I think is brilliant, because it's in the demo, you have demo characters rather than full character creation. And the first line is, maybe someday who you are will be up to you, but right now your choices are limited. And I was like, that's such a cute, creative way to get around that.
It's so good. It's so good.
I was like, that nailed it.
When we were prepping for this interview, Brian read me the "This is not your time to spend as you see fit," and then said, "That's this game. Like, that's kind of the whole game." Mm-hmm. And it really is.
You want to know what really makes that click? Mm. The game is just clocks.
Game is just clocks.
It's clocks all the fucking way down. If you want a clock, come to me. I open up my jacket in an alley. I have many clocks for you to fill.
You know what? Because I'm just going to like explode. I know that I'm not going to do these in order, but I have to talk about Aftermath and Countdown. So
let's
do your thing, Brian. Get excited.
I'm going to. First, I want you to tell me, because otherwise I will just talk at the listener and reading this stuff. So I would love you guys to tell me. Tell me about Aftermath to start, because I think the Aftermath, honestly, like the first couple of bits of it really cemented in my head when I read this, what the game wants to be and what I'm excited about the game. So what does the Aftermath look like after a conflict happens?
The idea for Aftermath is, sometimes you need to wind down, and this is a game where the conflict, which is the majority of play, can be incredibly intense and at times upsetting. There have been some very tragic events. We have lost characters that we really, really love just in the playtest campaign. And Aftermath is kind of a way for you to shift out of the mode of thinking about what I just did directly from that character first person perspective into a let's sit back. We at the table, the players, are going to talk about what just happened. And it's basically a set of questions where you talk about how the conflict went for everyone involved. Does it bring the war closer to an end? Who was directly affected by it? If any rivals showed up, how have they been affected by it? How do factions react? And I believe now you also get to learn more about a given faction that was involved in the conflict, because you don't just define these factions and these players at the world stage in one go. You learn more about them as they kick your ass.
And I also want to dig into Aftermath and kind of, this is sort of a jigsaw thing. Nova hit some stuff and I'm going to hit the other stuff, which is that like when you
look... Oh, that jigsaw. Okay.
Not the song. Yeah. Not yet.
Would you like to roll some dice?
You want to get sad.
Has no one made a jigsaw or saw role-playing game?
That feels like a world champ, right?
It's right. Gotta
Ooh,
be.
You're
like,
so right. You're so
how
right.
Is there not a role-playing game right now called I Wanna Play a Game?
Fuck.
Does that not Fuck. Exist?
All right, Elliot's got to cry. Oh, no, hit that one. Yeah, so, but of the inspirations for this game, one that I really wanted to bring to the table was actually The Expanse for a pretty specific reason. When I think about The Expanse, what I think about is the call and response structure of it. What happens in The Expanse is one character acts upon their beliefs and changes the world in some way. And then across the setting, other characters hear about that and then react to it, thus creating their own ripples in the pond, right? And I find this call and response thing, I think that's the engine that makes The Expanse so interesting. And I wanted to, even if this wasn't going to be like a full-on space opera game, I felt that was something that really keeps tension up. And for this reason, I wanted factions in the game and I wanted to incorporate some kind of faction turn or faction action or just some kind of thing where like, when the world changes, the factions get a response. They have the opportunity to respond and navigate it. And that is, I think that was kind of the first thing that I was thinking of when we kind of worked with Aftermath as a concept, was this preliminary idea of the faction turn. And literally, if the thesis of this game is that conflict changes the world, I think an old tagline was conflict changes the world, not necessarily for the better, but it just changes it. Or, you know, it didn't sound like that. But the point is that if conflict changes the world, we must see that happen. We have to make that visible and we have to put it in the player's hands. We are telling you, it's a fact. You just changed the world. How? Tell us how.
Mm. There is an element of The Expanse as a specific like reference point that show feels mythic. Because there are like what is happening on Mars ripples out, but it's not like the Belters have like direct influence over Mars. It's like there's a thing that happens way over here and that ripple just reaches me. And something about that feels mythic. I don't have a word for it, but that feels bigger.
Distance.
Not just, and it's not even just a sense of physical distance, but like a sense of
it's storytelling.
Yeah.
That's just what
in
storytelling
your world.
Does.
Yeah.
The faction stuff, we've mentioned factions a few times, so I just kind of want to say factions. We talked a lot about how we were going to do factions, and we knew that we did not want to have like a big sheet where you're tracking your relationship with all of these different factions, because the more interesting thing about them is how they interact with each other just by nature of what their deal is and how they interact with you. So the factions are literally just a set of questions that you answer as you play. When you make a faction for the first time, those two questions are random. You do not know what questions you are answering. So they grow through the story and you get them involved because you want to know their deal. We didn't want to have a general just faction turn section of the game, mainly because literally every other mech game does that. And we really want to make sure that we're kind of setting ourselves apart here. There's definitely a bit of that throughout some of the decisions we make.
We're contrarians by nature, to be sure.
And I don't think it's worse for it. I think you've created some really fun, like, contrasting directions from like the standard mech fair.
The two that really get me, so at the end of the conflict in the aftermath session, there's this like the list of questions, right? And it's, for me, it's actually the first two that really hit me really hard, especially thinking of like making something mythic, and especially this first question, which is, what is the battle named by those who survive? And I'm like, there is nothing that makes a battle or a thing feel more mythic than, like, I'm thinking of, I just watched Andor recently, and there's a bunch of scenes where everyone is like telling him about this heist that happens on this planet. And like the whole time I'm like, this guy was there. Like the like social capital of him just saying like, yeah, that was me, is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels big to say like, yeah, I survived the Battle of Sistoon or whatever.
And it affords the sense of history, right? Because it's also it's taking that language that we use to talk about history and military history, the battle of such and such, the massacre of blank.
Like, and those battles feel like honorable and mythic, but for the players, they just saw the carnage that was, and know that like the beautiful way of saying, like, you know, Gettysburg, like the way that you know Americans think of Gettysburg is like, this was a very important battle and it is one that is celebrated, but like a bunch of people died, like it was really bad in carnage.
There's
one of the most like violent battles of history, I think.
Nova, I imagine we're about to talk about the same thing. I think we're about to talk about the same thing.
We might. So the most recent playtest session we did, golly, I lots of stuff has been happening in the playtest campaign, and we finally have a player who's been missing a bunch of sessions and who has had two of his characters die, finally able to join in for a session. Things go bad, generally speaking. It's neck and neck for who's going to win the conflict, and this dude's hometown is about to be destroyed. He needs to get one more roll successful, and he fails it. Because of how that roll was failed, I had enough ammo to just outright end the conflict, or just enough to destroy the town. So I give him the choice. I can give you one more roll here, but I'm going to destroy your hometown if I do it. And he thought about it. He thought real long and hard about it and said, okay, do it. So destroyed his hometown. He made his last roll. He succeeded. He won. And sitting down to, like, not let the players leave until we had named that battle was fucking delightful. Also, I gave him the refrain, hometown hero.
Oh.
And also, yeah, it's
oh, that's nasty.
It also reflects back to the result, the, like, success states of this game, of, like, your results can be either Pinnacle, which is like complete success, Proud, which is kind of a standard success, Pyrrhic, which is an amazing word to throw into a game about conflict and war, and then Pitiful. And it's like, that tells you so much more than success, mixed success, and failure. This tells you what is that success.
We spent a long time workshopping those.
Yeah.
The name of that battle was Provo's Fall, which was the name of the town.
Another good battle name that I really, really loved was in the previous session, preceding session, what happened was one of the player characters used their once move, sacrificed themselves to end a conflict that was going just fucking awful. And
they were going to lose. Fully. There was no coming back from this. They were against it was bad. A super weapon was going to go off. And the pilot used their once move to just destroy everything and they won, and it shifted from talking about dice rolls and resources to, okay, we don't have to worry about any of these clocks that I made. Let's talk about how this feels. Let's talk about what you do and what you see. They sacrifice themselves, and that battle was named Veer's Gift. Veer being the character.
It's crazy how that mechanic of naming the battles, especially when like each session is essentially one conflict and then the aftermath and the countdown to the next, how much that defines the game and how not only defines it, but like how much that changes how you think about fights and how you think about combat and how you think about conflicts.
I can look at our little Google sheet where we're keeping record for the playtest campaign and go, I can read the name of this and go, I remember exactly what happened here and who died and how and what happened as a result. And you can see like a narrative from the names, and it's a really, really cool kind of hidden legacy mechanic that we have.
Artifacts of play. I do want to hit one more thing in the aftermath section while we're here, which is one question. Does this conflict bring the war closer to an end? And I love that question. Every time.
We've said yes to that once, and I've run this game 10 times.
I was about to say, I feel like if you've gotten to that point in play and you don't hear that question and go, no fucking way, then
it's also about that too is that especially when there are these, and this is again going back to like the language thing of, you've chosen the words of pitiful, pyrrhic, proud, and pinnacle as the ways to describe how a role resolves, how a conflict resolves, and to know those words and have to answer that question. So to say that was a pinnacle of success, it did not bring the war closer to an end. It was a pyrrhic victory. We lost more than we gained, and it did not bring the war closer to an end. Like, hits every time.
Yeah. We, game sad. Game real sad.
Game sad.
Sometimes you lose so bad that it does bring the war closer to an end. You're like, yeah, this is
in the bad way.
it's like, it's such a great, encapsulation of tragedy. One question, you will find a tragic answer almost with any combination, should you so choose.
That's a huge, huge driving force.
There was a really interesting conversation that I had a while back. I think this was in the Possum Creek server. And I was talking about Dragon Reactor earlier in development. And someone was, I can't remember exactly what they asked, but what I said was basically that Gundams are very good at ending a war. They are absolutely terrible at ending all war.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And so like we do have, I think we've written it into the game. It's either written into the game or it will be written into the game by the time it comes out. But when we have one piece of guidance, just one, for when to finish a campaign, right? Or a season of a campaign. And that is when you think you have reached a point of equilibrium, you have two options. Either stop playing right now and tell yourselves that peace will last, or keep playing to find out who fires the next shot.
Yeah. Hey, did y'all know this about Quinn? Quinn goes hard.
Quinn goes hard, dude.
Yeah. Quinn goes hard.
Hey, it's Elliot from Many Sided Media, and I'm here to tell you about the second setting guide for the hit Hope Punk sci-fi TTRPG Dreams and Machines from our friends at Modiphius. If you haven't heard, Dreams and Machines is a Hope Punk sci-fi TTRPG about a world in the far future cut off from Earth where sleeping mechs form a part of the landscape and a part of the culture. This new setting guide, The Broken Steps, will give players a detailed overview of the Surienta Simio region, as well as brand new glyphs, talents, and equipment for player characters, and expanded rules for mounts
and vehicles. But perhaps most excitingly, there are now rules for settlement building, so players and game masters can create these permanent, customizable communities that grow into societal hubs that forever leave your personal mark on Everprime, the world of dreams and machines. So if you want to pre-order The Broken Steps coming later this year, use code DREAMS10 at checkout and get 10% off the Game Master's Guide and the Player's Guide, everything you need to start playing.
Hey, this is Brian, and I just want to tell you about some cool new stuff from our friends at Hero Forge. Hero Forge offers fully customizable tabletop minis with dozens of fantasy species and thousands of parts to choose from, all within your web browser. When I first got into D&D, I spent hours fooling around with this online mini maker and even bought custom minis for all the players in my first D&D group, and they loved it. Hero Forge is constantly releasing new content, and they've just launched their latest feature, custom acrylic keychains. These keychains use the same technology as their color standees and are the perfect way to rep your beloved character when you're out in the world. They are highly detailed, ridiculously durable, and made of 1/8-inch thick acrylic featuring front and back color printing, measured on the same 30mm scale as Hero Forge minis and standees, which means they will be a one-for-one match for your heroes on the battle map. So visit heroforge.com to start designing your custom keychain today.
Ah, the web toll. Those that both creators and were created by the threads disentangle from the fringes to feast on the very thing that spawned them.
What's that, Siri? This is how you deal with me!
No! Do not harm my children!
Oh, you lost a feather. Can I keep it?
No, you can't force me to!
Do you know what lies within nothing?
Rocket is in trouble, Akasa! Can we turn on the wind shield remotely?
No, she could lose her job as Nakasar.
I don't fear Vayar.
No, but you fear me. If you intend to trick me, I will not hesitate to sever the oath bond entirely.
Why didn't you help me? Coward! I don't have a parachute! I don't like free falling!
Counterbalance, a high fantasy audio drama. Season 2, coming 15th of October, 2023. Learn more on trilunas.com.
Hi, my name is Robin.
And my name is Dylan.
Do you like Choices Matter video games?
If so, we started this podcast, Dorkspawn, so that I could show my best friend my favorite RPG series of all time, Dragon Age.
And now that I've played it, we want to share more of these choice-heavy games with each other.
Right now, Robin is showing me Mass Effect, which I have never played before.
And we are going to continue playing through these games together and discussing them book club style as we go.
You can join our Discord and play along with us and tune into Dorkspawn every Friday wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm also, just as a thing, in case you guys don't already know about this comic, or if anyone out there isn't aware of this comic, have either of you read The Power Fantasy, which is Kieran Gillen's current?
Yes, it has. It's on my list. It is on my list to read. I'm working through it. You're gonna like it more than me.
I feel like. I love it. To be clear, but I think Nova will like it even more than me. It's super Nova Core.
It's saying a lot of the same things that this game is saying about, but using superheroes rather than mechs, in that, like, the superheroes in this game are literally called nuclears because they are nuclear. Like, their power level is measured on how many lives they could end in an hour.
I know writers who use subtext, and they are all cowards.
Goddamn right. Kieran, we
Goddamn
love
right.
you.
And we love it.
Kieran Gillen's genuinely like one of my favorite writers doing the damn thing right now. I am working through the backlog.
It's great.
Oh, I'm almost done with Die. I have one volume left of Once in Future to get through.
Once in Future is great, but have you tried the Wicked and the Divine Compendium?
It's for the listening audience. It's on my Amazon wish list.
That's the largest book I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, Brian is holding just about the thickest comic collection that you could imagine.
The spine on that's got to be terrible.
The spine is... Oh, I can't imagine how it holds up.
How's the gutter on that?
How's the gutter? That's somebody who prints books, goddammit.
Me casually chatting up my comic friend. Hey, how's the gutter, bud?
How's the gutter on that, buddy? So... I can already see the time ticking away from us, and there's a mechanic in here I really want to make sure we make time to talk about, and it's because it's very similar to one of my favorite mechanics of another game that I will not go ahead and jump into, but I want to hear about refrains. Can you talk to me about
refrains? Yeah, you picked up on that, huh? You picked up on that being from another game? Did you pick up on that? Did you have an idea of where that came from? Did you get an idea there? I love the Wild Sea.
yeah, so me too.
We were trying to figure out, like, okay, we've got this cool robot shit. Great. What's our new type, Flash? What is our extra sauce? What's our fucking chili crisp in the ramen noodles of this game? And I said, oh, we should just steal Whispers from Wildsea. We should just take that because it's incredible. And we didn't just take it whole cloth, but it's very close.
Yeah, it's called Refrains now.
Yeah,
it's a different name.
Yeah.
There's a few other differences. As an example, so in Wildsea, when you get a whisper, it is a phrase that you can use to shape the world in some way. There are three ways you can use it: either whispering, saying, or shouting it. In Dragon Reactor, refrains, there are two ways you can use them, and only one of them that you can do yourself. These are also, they are phrases that you get that you can say to simply make something happen. When you speak a refrain, you say what you want to happen, and it happens, and then everyone else at the table gives a twist, which is some sort of narrative cant to it. Like, it just adjusts in some way, or something happens in addition. Or you can harmonize them, where you and at least one other pilot both contribute a refrain to an action. The effect is bigger, wider, and the twist is more dramatic. In addition to that, every pilot archetype has an archetype refrain. These are permanently on your character sheet. They have three of them, and they are permanently on your character sheet. You can use one archetype refrain per session. When you use it, it is on cooldown, essentially, until you use a certain countdown action called rewrite, where you refresh that, and you actually have to change words in it. You have to, at the very least, add or remove one word, but you can do, you know, a few. So you materially change the refrains on your character sheet as you progress through play, not only changing how they reflect on you, but what they do in the world and what you represent as a pilot. And this is just fucking space magic. That's how it works.
Yep.
And fuck yeah to space magic. Yeah.
We do
yeah,
love space magic.
And I love that you phrase it as when a pilot sings a refrain. The choice of sings as, and again, like, I want to keep harping on the fact that, like, the word choice in this game is so important and, like, really drives home everything.
I mean, especially when you're picking poets, sing to me the man muse, the man of twists and turns. I mean, you got it all right there. You're stealing all the best words.
And I do want to say, like, when I say you can just make something happen, I mean, refrains can do literally anything.
Yeah.
In our last session, Quinn's character was supposed to die. Quinn rolled on the disaster table, and Quinn used a refrain that I had given them in the session before where Veer died. And that refrain was, is it always going to be like this?
That's right.
Oh, that's right.
And we, rather than just being like, okay, yeah, you survive, no problem, we talked about it, and we were like, okay, you're going to survive, your mech is going to be destroyed, and you are out of this conflict. Because we have to respect, like, the drama of what just happened. But you don't have to do that. There's no specific rule about how you can or can't, you know, kind of adjust this stuff. And I think that's one of the strengths that this game has too.
I'd say me and Nova have talked about this before, but this game, the rules that we're giving you are super light and tight and incredibly functional. And I would say, and of course, obviously this is coming from one of the co-designers, so of course I'm going to say this, but I think these rules are really, really easy to improvise with and around. I think they give you everything you need to stand up, but I really think that even for GMs that have less experience with this kind of game or less experience kind of shaking things up a little bit or tweaking the mechanics here and there just to help things along. This game responds really, really well to that. There's lots of room for it. And I think this game just strikes a really, really good balance of what's written and what's not.
Yeah, 100%. And I just want to emphasize for folks who don't get to see the character creation kind of portions before they... and I think maybe you still have refrains in the demo, but the refrains are all these beautiful three lists of war is something, I am something, and I am not something. And
I am
like,
so proud of those.
They're great.
They're beautiful. And I mean, like, they're, but like the thing, and this is another reason I love Whispers in Wildsea, is that like saying a magical phrase, I am still me, there is no way that you don't interpret something interesting and compelling from that, because it's not, you know, the enemy dies. The phrase is not like, you know, like something simple like
and
that.
And especially in a game when the GM is the poet, it wants to be mythopoetic. You are forcing someone to say a line that is slightly outside of the normal parlance that forces them into a more poetic space. And they are saying, it's the game mechanics literally helping them to get into the headspace by saying a line that is slightly out of what you would normally say.
Like anachronistic almost, yeah.
Poetic.
Trying to be conscious of time, but I really want to get this in because in a session that I played recently with my sibling and their friend, that refrain, I'm still me, got to be used to, and it was so interesting. So one thing you might think is that in a game where you can create your own setting, it's possible to get too goofy. You can goofify yourself into a setting that doesn't take the game seriously and it's self-defeating. This is not true. This game is the way that it works, you can make as goofy of a setting as you want, and all of the themes will still be there, and then the dissonance will make it hit even harder. So the setting we came up with was like, they had like this Y2K, like kawaii aesthetic to them, and except for that's like the aesthetic of the faction that the players were part of. Except for this one player character who, as the transformed archetype, decided that they were transformed into a Molgoth. And so the way that the session ended was that they used their I am still me to be like, no, I'm still a child of the internet. I remember all of that hacking that I did in my youth, all of my time on the internet. And then they were able to like hack an entire station in one go and finish it up. And it was a surprisingly poignant moment. And so it's just like, yeah, get as goofy as you want, dude. You try and break this game. You can't do it.
I would love for somebody to break this game though. In fact, you know what? If you think you should break, you can, if you think you can break this game, you should go to bytes.rip/streams and yeah, back our campaign. So that it can be real and you can break it and tell us about it and rub our faces in it after you back the game.
Yeah, we dare
you. Man,
I really
don't want to hear about it. Oh, there's nothing I'd hate more than to hear about you playing our game.
Growl, and be sure to back it at the highest tier so you can really get us.
The highest tier.
Back exactly. It at the highest tier so you get immediate access to the in-development document and a special role in the Dinoberry Discord.
Brian, you wanted to talk about Countdown, and we want to talk about Countdown.
I want to talk about Countdown so fucking bad. I'm just going to give you my play-by-play of how I experienced reading this game. So first I read the demo, and I was like, this is rad. And then I read the full version. And the full version includes both character creation, which gave me more sense of like the refrains and stuff. And I was like, ooh, okay, cooler things. And the full version notably had Countdown, which was not in the demo version. And I was like, oh, this is the game for me. This is the thing I'm most excited about by far, and it's not even close. And I really like the rest
Thank
of the game,
you.
But that is the part I'm like, no, this is rad. I'm stealing this for something.
Yeah, please.
Yeah.
I want to just talk about it, but I should ask you a question so that you can set it up. So let me be a proper interviewer before I just gush and talk about
word
what
of mouth is good advertising, right?
Like, yeah, please gab.
Well, Brian. So the Countdown section starts with the line that I mentioned before. This is not your time to spend as you see fit. This is war's time and you are just borrowing it. And in a lot of story games, they have some kind of downtime mechanic. You know, we're playing Slug Blaster right now. People will be familiar with that. And there's
also
always
a great season, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a great
good
game.
Good plug.
Yeah, gotta be cross-promoting all the time. And every time I play a game with downtime, there's always a little something that I rub against. I couldn't quite tell you what it is, but I was never fully satisfied with downtime mechanics. Countdown, I think, changes that. Ooh. So why don't you tell me, tell the audience what the countdown mechanic is and how those work, and then I'll gush about why I love it and why I think I'm going to add it to all my games in the future.
Countdown is our direct response to downtime. We knew that we were going to do phases with this game, and it became very critical for us to, you know, we don't want to just do the thing that everybody else is doing. So what can we do different here? How can we be weirder with it? And specifically, how can we use every phase of this game to really, really push the themes that we are going for here? So countdown it's downtime. Everybody has a chance. Probably they might have a chance to do some actions, which are things like, you know, recovering, having a scene with someone, working on personal goals, attending a funeral, stuff like that. And the difference here is that not everybody gets the same amount of actions. The way that countdown works is after you've finished Aftermath, you build a pool of dice based on how that conflict went. You know, you get one dice for every pilot that's at the table, and then you get extra dice or you lose dice depending on what happened. If everyone made it out alive, you get one die. If even one person important to you died, you lose a die. Then, starting with the person who has the most hurt, the most ouchies on their character sheet, they go first. They say the action they're going to do, and they roll all those dice. And if something comes up, every die that comes up as a one or a two is removed from the pool. And then the next person goes. Because you don't know when the next fight is going to start, and you don't get to decide it. Unless you get yourself down to one die, and then you can decide it, but that's, you know, gambling. We're gambling. Countdown is gambling.
Yeah. And pinned in mine and Nova's DMs is a line for me, I think from like 3 years ago, which is, it's just gambling again. I love gambling.
Session before, when that player sacrificed themselves, anytime a player character dies, the first countdown action is remember, and you attend their funeral. You still have to roll dice for that.
It's not free.
It's not free. And because of that, only one person got to recover that session. But two sessions before, everybody came out of that fucked up. Everybody was badly hurt. They were injured. And they all got to fully heal. And then some. Because they kept pushing their luck with the countdown dice. And they kept getting lucky. They got to fully heal. Some people got some advancements. Like, we just rolled those bones and it went great.
So first off, Elliot and I have both talked on this podcast and on My First Dungeon that we love games within games.
Gambling.
We love gambling. We love it so much.
We love gambling here on My First Dungeon. But that's the wrong show.
But having games within games, and especially like push your luck games, like we did push it. We had like a little bit of it in Slug Blaster, and then we also just played Last Train for Bremen, which is playing Liar's Dice, which is ultimately an element of push your luck game.
Yeah.
Those are such great fodder for role-playing games, because you feel the tension, you're always making the choice to like try to do something more, to try to get that one last thing. It feels really thematic. But then with this, it also has the element of also being a initiative type thing, where if you get down to no dice left, you get caught off guard and ambushed. If you choose to stop early, if you decide to not push your luck, then you get to start the next conflict in a more advantageous position. But what I love the most is that you start a thing, you start this countdown phase, and you don't know how many things you're going to get to do. I've never seen a downtime that kind of feels like combat, in that you stressful. Have to choose
yes.
how you
yes.
order.
It's stressful. Yes.
Yes.
It's uh-huh, like, uh-huh, like uh-huh. I feel like downtime has always felt like, okay, now it's our role play time and we kind of do whatever we want. And a lot of games want that. That like that is the choice for a lot
Everybody
of
Everybody unclenches their fist normally for downtime.
A little bit, yeah. And you get to do all the things you want to do. In a game that is explicitly about war and using the word conflict over encounter, like when it's that specific that it wants to deal with that, the element of this is the war's time and you are just borrowing it, that's going to echo throughout the entire fucking game. And I love the idea of this countdown mechanic will create more dynamic encounters without the GM having to do anything, without the poet having to do anything, because there is a drastically different encounter that will happen with exactly the same thing that they planned. If no one's able to recover and everyone is sad and didn't get to do anything, or if they fully recover and get to have a bunch of scenes with other people and get to like recover and retrofit and relax and remember, it's wildly different. And starting, you always have the hope, which is the thing that every, you know, war and conflict is built upon. You have the hope of being able to do it all and to get your rest with the knowledge that there is a very real chance that you will not get those things, even if you are set up for success. You could have, say you have 8 dice that you're going to be rolling, and the first time some unlucky bastard rolls all ones, you're going to scream and shout at your fucking friend because they fucked up and it was their fault and they did it on purpose, I swear to God. But
yeah, so when you play Dragon Reactor, you should use loaded dice.
100%.
That's what we're saying. Because you don't even need to, though, because this game, I mean, just, I mean, y'all know this from the WildSea season, those D6 pools are fickle. They are fickle.
They're fickle. I love a D6 pool.
I'm rolling 7 dice. How bad can this go?
Oh, right. Oh God. It was so good when Kevin, the hometown hero, his first roll of the game, baby, he was like, I have 7 dice. I need 3 hits. Let's go, pitiful.
Not a one. Not a single one.
Absolute whiff.
Brutal. Ugh.
The gut punch when that happens, especially because like at the higher magnitudes, we haven't touched on that much and you know, we won't. But hey, there's other interviews with us where we do talk about it in more depth.
You should go read the game and back us.
Read the game. Just read the game.
Just go do it.
But especially at higher magnitudes where you need more hits, you're more likely to collect more dice to try and get those more hits. But when you have more dice and then they all still roll bad, you have exponentially worse outcomes. So it all feeds back into each other, and you really genuinely never know how this game is going to go moment to moment, roll to roll. Every roll is so impactful and changes. It can change the entire battlefield. Just like that.
I feel like I sometimes have trouble with dice pool systems. I want, there's something about them that sometimes gives me a hitch, that I always want like kind of the more immediacy of like a single
die roll.
You want
to be able to read it faster.
I want to be able to see it immediately. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's for sometimes. There are times when I'm just like, quick, make a roll. Like you want that momentum to carry.
Totally.
I think I will always feel that with dice pool systems. Just a little bit of it. And sometimes it's right, sometimes it's wrong, but the countdown of this just, oh man, it really it makes me not care, which is really tough for me with dice pools.
Yes! It's true. To try and convince Brian that Brian and I have been co-designing a game that
that we are,
we'll talk about it a later date
countdown from we're not stealing countdown.
Yes.
And trying to convince Brian that a D6 dice pool is the way to go is hard. So the fact that you've got him excited about one is very big.
The inconsistency of it.
I do like them. I think it's fully, and Elliot and I have had this conversation, it's fully a product of making podcasts, of there's an element of there's the momentum of stuff happening, and then you want the result to just happen. And when you have to like see 7 dice and decipher what it means, it's just that extra second that takes away. But I don't mind it here, which is low sounding praise, but it's actually very high praise.
No,
that feels like huge praise. Actually,
it is actually huge praise. It just sounds like.
Can we actually use that as a? No, I was going to say, can we use that as a poll quote?
Poll quote. I don't mind the dice.
Can we say?
I don't mind that Brian doesn't mind the dice pool.
On the back of the cover.
I mean, well, but that's really nice to hear you say. Just because, like, for me and Nova, pacing is the key. I could go into more depth on that, but in general, pacing is the key, and I think that's true of Countdown, and I think that's also true of how it works in the normal dice pools during conflicts. And dice pools are slower. These are slower than a normal quote-unquote roll. But it works here because you are informed that you are these giant machines that have so much power and impact. When you build the dice pool, you feel it wind up and then you feel the impact. Yes. And so that slightly slower pace, it doesn't actually feel slow because it is correct. The pacing is correct for what's happening in the story.
I agree.
It really makes you feel like Spider-Man.
Yeah.
How
this is a
say
a
more.
You're gonna have to say at least one more.
Sorry, say
this
more.
This is a joke for the video game people. every review of a Spider-Man video game has someone going. The web swinging really makes you feel like Spider-Man.
Oh yeah.
Okay, I'm with you.
Okay, I'm getting.
Oh, we're not so genuinely no sold. I thought they were just fucking with you.
No. No, they fully didn't get it.
Awesome. That's awesome.
I really love finally having a true instance of me having to explain a joke. This happens all the time, but thank God it's off mic. This is on national fucking TV.
I mean, we can cut it, but if we talk about it too much, no, and it's too funny, we gotta leave it.
It's fine. It's very funny. There are people who we all know who are really gonna love this. So.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I'm actually probably gonna come out worse on this because I am a video game guy and like should have just gotten the bit.
I appreciate it, but you don't have to. It's fine. It's
No, I think we should really pick this apart for the rest of the rest.
We're already over. We're already over time.
Let's stay on the Spider-Man.
Elliot Davis, fake gamer.
Oh, man.
So there is a lot more to this game that we have not even touched on. I know one of the big ones that I love, that I'm literally looking at my notes, and because I skipped over, because I was so excited about Countdown, I forgot about anchors, which are just like such a great... Oh, yeah. It's like taking the best way of doing bonds and relationships for characters and like mechanizing them, but in a way that is fun and actually gives you mechanical advantages and like is impactful that we don't have time to talk about, which is a bummer. But that just means you have to go back the campaign so you can read all about anchors, which is not in the demo. So you have to actually back the campaign to get early access to the full play document. So go do that right now. But
right now.
Before we get out of here, we do need you to tell us all about the BackerKit campaign that is currently running for Dragon Reactor and tell us, you know, where is it running? When is it running? What can people get if they back? And, you know, what are your pie in the sky dreams for, you know, if you have any stretch goals or what do you want this game to become at the back end of this campaign after you fund to the sky and back?
First, I do just want to say thank y'all so much for having us. This has been a delightful time.
Thanks for coming.
I'm so glad I finally got to be on the podcast.
The only one.
The only one. Dragon Reactor is, like Brian said, currently crowdfunding on BackerKit. You can find it at bytes.rip/dreams. That's bytes.rip/dreams, like the thing you have when you sleep. This is a tight campaign. We are practicing scope management today, and we are living our best lives because of it. We are trying to reach $7,000 to fund a small-scale print run, black and white zine with really, really gorgeous art, a cover by Charlotte Leskowski, who you may know from some of Snow's games or things like Daisy Chainsaw. Interior art by Emma Harvey, who previously worked on Gun and Slinger, and layout by Luna P, who is just all over the place and the best to ever do it. The tiers that you can back out, really straightforward. There is a digital tier where you just get the PDF when it's out. There is a print and PDF bundle because we all love to collect things because we're little freaks like that. And there is an early access tier. But that early access involves, after the campaign funds, you will get direct access to the Google Doc that Quinn and I work in. You're not going to be able to write in it because we're not freaks like that. But you will be able to see. God, we should let them write in it.
Community development.
I was just thinking how crazy it'd be to make a tier where people can write in the same Google Doc.
You can just write in the game. You'll be able to see as we work on it. There's not a lot of work that's left to do because the text is pretty much complete.
Yeah, so back it quick so that you can catch some.
yeah, back it immediately. And additionally, as a nice little thank you, you get a special role in the Dinoberry Press Discord server to show, you know, that you did the dang thing and we appreciate you. Project is ending on August 28th, the last Friday in August, I believe. And hopefully we're already funded by the time you're hearing this. But if we are, you should still go back.
Absolutely. At the highest tier.
Highest tier, please.
So, Quinn and Nova, we have reached that delightful end point of our conversation where we ask the question we ask all our guests, which is, what are you bringing to the table? And that is just our cute way of asking for a recommendation from you to our audience, which can be anything at all. It can be in tabletop, outside of tabletop. Quinn and Nova, what are you bringing to the table?
I'm going to recommend two things, and I'm going to go really quick about this. First, I am going to recommend I Am Your Beast, which is an incredibly kick-ass video game by Strange Scaffold. And while you're there, check out everything Strange Scaffold does because they are wonderful. And two, there is an anime called Metallic Rouge that I can't stop thinking about that is really, really good. I'm not going to say anything else about it. It's very, like, retro but modern. It makes me think of some of the best moments of Trigun or Outlaw Star. And the music's incredible. There's a choral song that plays where the choir is just going, now is the time for fighting. And I think that that's amazing.
Yeah, I'm sold.
And Quinn?
I'm feeling kind of in a musical mood. So I'm going to bring one of my favorite bands of the last 5 years, and that is Cheek Face. One word. Cheek Face, America's local band. Very sardonic. Bless you. Sardonic lefty talk rock. I think it's a really tight outfit, and I think they're a lot of fun. And possibly my other recommendation. Oh, finally, a platform where I can recommend this band. Get ready to have your heart broken because this band only released one fucking album in 2020. It's one of the best fucking albums I ever heard in my life. Haven't not a peep from them since. I think they're mostly like a live band. They're called The Gooms. G-O-O-M-S. The album is called Laugh with a period at the end. Just this really awesome, kind of ska-y, garage, a bit more post-processing than your normal garage. But seriously, this album, absolute banger.
We will link all that in the show notes.
Thank you both so much for coming to the table. Do you want to let people know where they can find you online if they are looking for you?
Yeah, I mean, just first off, truly, truly, thank you for having us. What a pleasure. What a delight. I really appreciate the energy and attention to detail that you guys brought. So much fun. So much fun. Where can you find me on the internet? I am Samuel Quinn Morris. You can call me Quinn, Authenticity Trip, or Meme Friend, depending on where you know me. I am on Blue Sky at 200proofgames.bsky.social. That's 200proofgames. I also have a website of my own, which is 200proof.games. And there you could find the 1E Manifesto, which is maybe some of the writing I'm best known for, as well as Any Percent, which is my tarot-fueled speed running tabletop RPG That's a lot of fun, too. I think the other thing of mine that I want to shout out is the media analysis podcast that I run with my friend Matt Fennell, Urasawa Boys, where we read and dissect the works of manga author and artist Naoki Urasawa. So if you've watched or read Monster, 20th Century Boys, Pluto, that stuff that we're working with.
Pluto's rad.
The first season, it is rad. And we just at this time of recording, me and Matt, just a couple days ago, recorded the final episode of the Pluto season. So the first six are out, seven should be out soon. So folks, if you like Monster or Pluto, those are the seasons we have. And I think that we do really good work over there. Matt's delightful. So yeah, that's
me. Matt's pretty good.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
You don't listen to it, Nova. Oh, no. You know Matt. All right. Sorry. I got testy.
We literally have a Discord chat called Jort Squad.
Yeah, and you literally don't listen to our podcast.
There's too many podcasts.
No, there's only this podcast.
This is the only podcast. And Nova, where can people find you?
Pretty much everywhere. First, you can find Dinoberry Press at dinoberrypress.com. We have a lot of shit, a lot of stuff. We have been doing games since 2019, and they're kind of all bangers, I think. Not to, you know, brag, but I don't think
just that good. It's just how it is.
That really got you, that Brian.
I've never heard someone know and be so confident in who they are in one sentence.
Yeah.
And let me be clear, I applauded it. I had to escape my lips with joy.
This is a long time of figuring out who I am and how I want to present in the tabletop space, which could be its own podcast. Suffice to say, you can find us at dinoberrypress.com. You can find us on Blue Sky at Dinoberry Press. You can find me at Dicey Nova, and you can sign up for a newsletter, join our Discord, bites.rip/discord is the same URL. And you can also find me on BackerKit on August whatever today is. You can go there right now.
I'm there.
I'm in your computer screen on BackerKit.
Wait. At bites.rip/dreams, that's DREAMS, like the thing you do when you sleep.
Like the thing you do when you sleep. And I know it might be scary to you. I'd be scary to you that Nova's inside your computer, but don't worry, because I'm outside your computer.
But don't worry, because this is worse.
You don't have to be scared of Nova. You can be scared of me instead.
So if you want to escape Quinn's, you have to go inside your computer and then back
his
campaign.
I'm not the plural. I'm only the singular Quinn.
I felt myself say it. I'm so used to saying Quinn's now rather than
he's
Quinn.
He's around. Hi, Quinn's.
Quinn's is everywhere. This, hi, Quinn's. Hey, Quinns, if you're listening to this, you should back Dragon Reactor and then do a video about it.
Quinns, you would actually like Dragon Age or Dragon Reactor.
I think you would. Have you ever noticed how many Quinns there are in the tabletop space? What's up with that? I think there should be a massive Quinn jam. I think only people named Quinn should be allowed in this jam.
I thought you were going to say a massive Quinn culling.
No!
There can only be one.
Look, there can only be one, but I don't need to, like, that'll just happen naturally on its own, right? I don't need to do anything to make that happen.
Sure.
What does that mean, Quinn?
Back Dragon Reactor to find out.
All right. And of course, as always, if you want more gaming content from us here at Many Sided Media, you can join the Many Sided Media Discord or the Many Sided newsletter. You can also support Talk of the Table on the Many Sided Media Patreon, where you can get ad-free episodes, bonus interviews and roundtables, as well as a whole bunch of great content for our other show, My First Dungeon. All of that is linked in the show notes. You know the drill. Rate, review, and follow Talk of the Table wherever you get your podcasts. And that's what the table is talking about. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.